Hello and welcome back to another episode of the HRER podcast, where we delve into the world of HR emergencies and scandals. Don't forget to follow and subscribe to HRER on your favourite podcast platform.
Get ready for scandalous stories, lessons learned, and a generous dose of advice for HR professionals for navigating the HR landscape.
Our goal here is not just to entertain, but also to help you learn from the topics we touch on. In order to save your business from its own emergency, we had the disciplinary hearing and we informed Dave we were dismissing him at the end, that a taxi would be arranged to take him home as he would be required to leave his company car. In response to this, he grabbed the car keys off the table and legged it, took the car and drove off. The HR lady in concern here went and knocked on the door. His daughter answered the door, told her that she was trespassing and that her behaviour was making her father mentally ill and that she would call the police.
It's a very confrontational situation. We're not really doing anything to diffuse matters here. So if the contract says or the policy says that if you have company property, when your employment ends, it has to be returned, is that your employment ends, return it immediately, or do we have a reasonable time frame?
Just before we start, protect your business from the risk of tribunal, reduce legal costs, and save yourself from HR headaches with our Hero software and employment law consultancy services.
Hello, welcome to episode 22 of HRER. I am one of your hosts, Ollie Robinson.
And I'm Alyssa Thursfield, the founder of Heroes.
She is. And an excellent employment lawyer, can I add? We're about to talk into another story today. We've had an email through regarding pesky Dave's at it again. I'll read it out and then we'll get cracking, shall we?
Let's get going.
Hi, Alyssa. Quick one. I'm sat outside Dave's house, the chap we were dismissing today. We have a bit of a problem. We had the disciplinary hearing and we informed Dave we were dismissing him at the end, that a taxi would be arranged to take him home as he would be required to leave his company car. In response to this, he grabbed the car keys off the table and legged it, took the car and drove off. We rang to ask him about the return of the car or at the very least make it available for us to collect. We've also emailed and texted him and he won't respond. The HR lady in concern here went and knocked on the door. His daughter answered the door, told her that she was trespassing and that her behaviour was making her father mentally ill and that she would call the police. She then told me to I'm now in my car on the street. What do I do?
So, quite a situation here. We've got someone who has been dismissed. We've tried to retrieve company property at the end, which is quite normal. And the guy's taken the car, doesn't seem to be willing to give it back,
and
is actually making threats against the company. So again, as always, real situation. This is something that we dealt with. I'd say, yeah, highly unusual, I would say, to be called by HR from the side of the road. Sort of in the midst of this as it was going on, rather than it sort of being that we've gone back to the office to kind of regroup and decide what to do. This was, you know, I'm currently outside the
house.
We're
in the field.
Yeah.
I'm in the field, man.
what do you suggest? So my initial suggestion at this point was go back to the office, stop sitting in the car outside an employee's house. We can resolve this through other channels, which we'll get into, obviously, as we start to unpick this one.
It sounds like, initially my thoughts were, it just sounds like sour grapes on Dave's behalf.
I mean, he's obviously taken the dismissal as a bit of a shock, hasn't
he?
I can't say that anyone necessarily rationally thinking in response to being dismissed would think, right, I'm going to grab the car keys and take the car. Because at some point, you know, you've got to give the car back. You know, looking at this kind of objectively, or, you know, as someone who wasn't involved, you'd think, well, maybe, you know, if there was something in the car he didn't want them to find,
and sort of
had a bit of a panic.
Some personal bits.
But then still, you know, you just say, well, look, can I empty the car before you call me a taxi?
Yeah.
You know, people generally are highly reasonable. And I'd say it's a really good query in some ways, because I think when we were talking stats about the things that we post and the information that we put out there to sort of help HR, one of the most popular queries we found in terms of hits has been about the return of company property. It's a real kind of hot topic in terms of, you know, HR professionals and companies. So, yeah, I think this is, one, it's a good topic, but two, it's a bit of a strange situation for us to try and unpick as well.
It is. I mean, interesting observation. We were at CIPD last week and the terminology around, like, company equipment, I noticed, had changed. It's now been referred to as assets.
Company assets, yeah. So we have asset registers, which sounds very...
banky.
Official, yeah. Very,
it sounds
real
bank, doesn't
very
it?
Very investment, doesn't it? That sort of world. But yeah, so, you know, keeping track of your company asset registers and who's got what assets, you know, that's, and it's something that, you know, companies spend a lot of money on this sort of stuff. So if you're getting into the realms of everybody gets a laptop, everybody gets a phone, potentially everybody gets a tablet, company cars, you know, especially with people working from home, then what office setups can cost, if that's something that employees are expensing, but then they're expected to return when their job ends, as well as cars, you can be dropping hundreds of thousands of pounds on employee property, on company property for employees to use, sorry. So one, it's important that we can keep track of it. But two, it's really, really important that when employment ends, if we're expecting it back, that we get it back.
Yeah, you think as well, like, if it was a littler thing, like I've known it where big companies come in, buy small businesses, and some assets go missing, like odd phone, like a watch or something.
Yeah.
They can go missing, but a car...
No, we're not.
It's quite obvious. And what kind of car was it?
This was an Audi. So
it's decent. Whip.
Yeah, we were gonna miss it.
Yeah,
if it was gone. Put it that way.
Enough of my personal questions. Let's actually go into the proper ones. Questions to ask as an employer. The first one: what steps should we take to reclaim the vehicle without escalating the situation? Do we need to involve the police or legal counsel?
So in this situation, this was being escalated. So where we've got someone who has taken the car at the end of the disciplinary meeting, has then driven home, and we've got HR then following in the car, I'm hoping there wasn't some sort of dramatic chase.
Police chase.
I wasn't briefed that that was the case. No, it would not get them out of a speeding ticket if they were. It's not a legitimate reason for speeding in a car. You know, they'd turned up at the employee's house. They'd knocked on the door. It's a very confrontational situation. We're not really doing anything to diffuse matters here. And I would say Dave in this situation, one, he's going to know that he's done something wrong, but equally then, human nature, we're very proud, you know, people can get very entrenched. The instinct is going to be, well, you know, you've done something that hurts me personally. There's that backlash kind of reaction that I think is what we're experiencing here, particularly with the way that the daughter behaved. So going toe-to-toe to someone in that situation is only going to escalate. It's only going to raise the temperature of that situation. And whilst we might not be able to entirely, you know, get to conflict resolution in this situation, it needs to be about conflict reduction.
Yes.
So that is not following somebody home, turning up at the front door and making demands. There are other ways that we can deal with this. So my advice to them was that you need to go back to the office. I'd suggest that we either message or email to say, look, this hasn't unfolded the way that we would have wanted.
Mm-hmm.
We will give you until whatever time to make arrangements to return the car or make it available to us, in the absence of which we're either going to call the police or the lease car company will arrange to come and collect the car with a flatbed and you will be charged for the cost of new keys if they can't, because obviously if they can't recover a car by using the keys, it's more expensive to get it on and then replace the set. So we're putting the decision in his hands then to say, well, look, these are your options. Ultimately, he knows he's not going to be able to keep the car. But rationalising the situation, so taking that step back and obviously not inflaming matters. And this is someone who still has a right of appeal. So when it then comes to those later appeal stages, so this was a dismissal due to behaviour. Interestingly, someone who couldn't follow a reasonable management instruction, who was then told to leave his car keys, didn't follow a reasonable management instruction and took the car. It's not going to help him in this situation with the appeal in terms of, you know, confidence that the company's going to have that that sort of behaviour is going to resolve itself. So in some ways, it's helped the company because it's shown that the decision that they've taken has been reasonable. So reasonable being our favourite word in the employment world. And it's also kind of indicative of the character that we're dealing with. So that on appeal, if he were to say, look, you know, I will follow reasonable management instructions, I'm really sorry about my behaviour, we can say, well, actually, when you were asked to leave your company car, you stole it. So, you know, that doesn't give us much confidence. How would you explain that?
So against the law, innit?
Yeah, I'd be using that situation more to the company's advantage rather than going chasing after the car in broad daylight.
Given hindsight, though, would you advise, you would not have advised him to go to his house, would you?
Absolutely not. No. I mean, and this is giving, is it Tesla that we're doing this? Tesla
vibes?
Yes,
it was, yeah. A few
weeks
ago.
We're going to do it again. Yeah. Hi, Elon, we're going to keep doing it until you reply.
Yeah.
though he's got a big job now, hasn't
he? D-O-G-E.
Yeah, big job.
The big job.
In Germany, I think it was, where you've got employees either who'd called in sick or were off on long-term sick. Line managers were told to go to their houses and check up on them unannounced.
Crazy.
We don't do that. It's not a good idea. So yeah, anything that intrudes on an employee's personal and private space is never going to go down very well, and it's going to be behavior that you're going to struggle to justify as reasonable. So someone's house is their safe place. We don't intrude on that without invitation or permission. And in this situation, even though we've ended this person's employment, we should still have those boundaries in place.
He's been understanding. I get a monk on if my parents turn up on...
Really?
Yeah, I get a monk on if I hear a knock on the door and my dad's there. I'm like, why are you here? I've come to put this window, whatever.
So no house visits for you then?
No. I'd be appalled if you or Michael turned up, to be
honest. No, you wouldn't. If Michael turned up at your house, you'd throw him a party. Maybe, you'd be so happy to see him.
Yeah, second question. How does the threat of trespassing illegally implicate the employer? Does it?
So, I mean, look, I'm not going to pretend to be an expert on the law of trespass. I would say that in this situation, it's probably going to be something where the police would be saying, this sounds like a private dispute.
They've knocked on the door, the front door, haven't
they? You know, this is obviously just the door to getting very upset. And when you're cornered, which in this situation they are, they're going to know that they shouldn't have the car. They're going to know that he's behaved in a way that's not ideal. Loved ones will often then kind of pull on any potential lever to try and, you know, improve their own situation.
Just protecting, isn't she? Really?
Yeah. So in this situation, by accusing them of trespass, I would say there's probably no real legal risk from a criminal perspective. But what I would say is we are crossing those boundaries by turning up at an employee's house, even though they've technically done something wrong. There's other avenues that we can use.
How do you get back from that? That's weird, isn't it? It's a weird dynamic you set yourself up for there.
It is.
How do you get back from that?
Yeah, and also where you've kind of got this screaming match with an employee's family member on a doorstep. Mm-hmm. Again, you know, if we've got an appeal to get through, that relationship's probably at the point where it's completely broken down. You know, we're undermining the appeal process if we're getting to the point where...
He's going to want to leave anyway.
Yeah, and if, you know, the decision were to be reversed, there's unlikely to be a functioning relationship for him to come back to. So it's digging us a deep hole here that's probably going to be quite difficult to get out of by the nature of, you know, that it's descended to that point.
Just unnecessary, isn't it? Final question as an employer. Given that Dave is not responding to our communication and is refusing to return the car, can we consider his actions as theft, or is this more of a breach of contract issue?
So it's breach contract, because we will have in the contract terms about if employment ends that employer property has got to be returned. What we need to be really clear on, and it's again back to contracts and policies, which again is a favourite topic of mine, is around timescales. So if the contract says, or the policy says, that if you have company property when your employment ends, it has to be returned, is that your employment ends, return it immediately, or do we have a reasonable time frame? Mm-hmm. So often when I'm drafting dismissal letters for clients, we will say, you know, your employment ends on this day, you're going to get paid on this date, you have until this date to return company property. So we give them time to kind of go and find everything. And particularly with company cars, they've got to be returned generally clean and good condition. So by giving them a few days, they can get it valeted, they can get their stuff out of it. If they've dinged it, they can go get it touched up if they need to, and that sort of thing. Like you would if you had your own hire, lease, you know, contract car, whatever. Yeah. You want to make
the deadline was coming up. Yeah,
exactly. You want to make sure that you're not going to get fined when you take it back. So, I would say in this instance, it's probably a little bit harsh that we dismiss and then go give us the keys. It's an emotive situation anyway. From a kind of pride and dignity perspective, it's a bit like a kick in the shins then to go and hand the car over, rather than saying, look, okay, even though it's a conduct dismissal, we're going to give you a bit of time just to sort things out with the car, because you've probably had it for a while. It might be a one car household where the car's the only one that's being used.
Yeah, you don't know, do you?
It's having that kind of human, you know, consideration as well.
Yeah.
So making sure that our policies and contract is clear in terms of time scales that things need to be returned, and also condition. Because one thing that I said to HR in this situation was, you know, this situation has now escalated. If we go get the car, you know, so say lease hire company goes to get it, or, you know, he does comply and brings it back, is he going to have damaged it? Is there going to be then some kind of further kind of escalation here, rather than just letting things kind of cool off and say, look, appreciate that tempers have kind of flared, let's just find a constructive way out of this, rather than kind of going toe-to-toe with them saying, you know, you've stolen the car, well, you're trespassing, well, we'll take you to court for this.
It's tit for tat.
Yeah, it's never going to end well. No. And it's always going to be them. When you've got someone who's very proud or very entrenched in their position, the higher we go, the harder it is to kind of scale that back and then to give in ultimately, which is what we want this person to do. So I'd say from a psychological perspective, taking the high ground, diffusing a situation and looking at conflict reduction, giving someone some time to cool off and then saying, right, here's some sensible steps for our way out of this. Mm-hmm. We're more likely to get the car back. We're more likely to get it back in good condition, and that this is a matter that we can then move on from.
Going to be less of a faff long term. I mean, with in this situation, did the policy stipulate a deadline, or was it just you
it
need
didn't
to return
it was
it?
Terminate return so but then
vague isn't it
it no? is vague and that's the thing. So they would say, well, look, on our reading it terminates, you have to return. The employee's going to say, well, my reading is, as long as it gets returned at some point, I've complied with the policy. Yeah. So that's why we need to be really, really clear on that wording, and also make sure that's communicated to an employee. So if your policies are buried somewhere, you know, they were given a handbook 14 years ago when they started, and
he's
it's
not
in a
no, is he?
Exactly. So, and again, it's why with the HERO system, we've made the policies so very visible. So if you don't have your own policies, then there's the ones that I have personally drafted that are there, mm-hmm. and they're available for any of the companies that want to use them. They just tick them, policies there. The employee can read them. They're notified when there's a policy there. We can see when they've been read. So we've got that nice audit trail. So if someone says, well, I haven't read the policy, I was never given it, well, we can say, well, actually, we saw that on the 14th of October at 2:20 in the afternoon, you did. So we've got that kind of evidence. But also, it kind of helps you to see where the gaps are. Mm-hmm. So you might have a company property policy, but it refers to things like laptops and devices. Whereas when it comes to things like cars, you probably need something a bit more detailed about things like lease terms, condition of the car, mileage, personal use, you know.
It's more robust, doesn't it?
Precisely. If there's issues with it, you know, who's responsible for keeping it roadworthy? Who else is allowed to drive it? So in mm-hmm. this situation, was Dave's wife allowed to drive it? You know, if his kids are over the age of 17, are they allowed to drive
insurance
it?
Insurance stuff as well. That's a
yeah. So all this sort of stuff we'd want covered in some sort of policy. So, you know, it's only sort of when you see a list perhaps that somebody else has that you think, oh, actually, we've got a gap there, which is why I, you know, not to like overly plug, why I love the system so much. Yeah, yeah. Because then, you know, someone might go, oh, actually, we don't have one of those. Tick, now we do.
Yeah, yeah, easy as that. Yeah. I mean, we were mentioning AI this morning, weren't we, in office, and you'd done a bit of, I don't want to call it, is it, we'll call it testing, like with AI mm-hmm. and writing policies and mm-hmm. stuff, and was like, was one of the things AI was missing, like, was related to like dates and things like that, and...
Yeah, so it was the last testing that I did with it was in relation to some legal principles, which it got totally wrong.
I can remember
it was like, and it's actually on my LinkedIn. You know, it was stuff that actually is pretty damaging if you get it wrong, because it's yeah. one of the core legal yeah. tests that we use in employment law. But I would say the issue that we've potentially got with AI is what's missing is that human element and how your business works. Mm-hmm. So it might write a decent policy to do with cars and cover all the points that you need it to deal with. Mm-hmm. But if your business has an issue with people returning cars, either in a not roadworthy condition or perhaps they're late when they're returning them, there's probably going to be some bespoke niggles that are kind of recurring issues that you think, actually, now we need to consider putting this into the policy. Mm-hmm. So yes, as a standalone starting point, it might get you 3/4 of the way there, but to be really, really effective, it needs to be bespoke to your business. Because otherwise, we're back to the model that, you know, the big HR consultancies, I don't know if we can name them, but I think, you know, if I say big HR consultancy,
fill the gaps. Yeah,
you can probably guess who I'm talking about when yeah. it comes to, you know, standard contracts and policies. I can spot them a mile off because they are all the same. So when I have clients who've come to me from those companies and they will say, oh, no, it's great, I've got a handbook. The minute I see the front page, I can tell you how every policy is worded, you know. Because they're all the same. Yeah, they're not bespoke.
Like templates.
So it's you know what? They're fine in probably, you know, 80% of cases. It'll do what it needs to do. Yeah, yeah. But actually, what is the point of having a policy if it's not directly applicable to your business and the problems that you face with your culture, your staff, you know, your workforce? And that's where sort of having someone who gets to know your business and someone who's really kind of embedded, mm-hmm. that's where the value really is, because it just makes things so much more seamless. It makes the cogs turn much, much easier.
Personalization, isn't it?
Yeah.
We are going to do, I think, a podcast about AI, aren't we, at some yeah. point? But it's
yeah. Though my big topic after this morning, AI recruiting, which is like
yeah, yeah, yeah.
I knew about it to some extent, but the avatars that are actually doing the interviews, yeah. this is like a whole new black hole that I'm falling into and now doing research on. So that we're going
to
do at some point.
Yeah, I look forward to that. Yeah. That's a bit more my bag. We'll go on to employee questions now. Can the company legally come to my home to reclaim my company property? And what are the legal consequences of that?
So we're drifting out of employment law here. So there's two competing legal interests here. We have got property that belongs to the company that is being held on employee property. So the car belongs to the company, employee has it, potentially illegally, but at the very least in breach of contract. Mm-hmm. Whether it's as far as theft, we'll come on to that definition in a moment. We then have employer who shouldn't be on employee property, or they've withdrawn their consent for them to be on the property. Is that trespass? So in this situation, no one's really ever going to end up very happy. All you're going to have is potentially two lawyers on the phone to each other going, get off my client's property, we'll give us the car back.
Yeah.
As I've said already, what we want to be looking here is conflict reduction. And actually, let's be the bigger person. Get off his driveway, go back to the office, yeah. cool off, and let's deal with this without going legally toe-to-toe, which might be a bit of a weird thing to hear from a lawyer to say, don't use me in this situation. Yeah. You don't want me being the big gun coming in to kind of then have a pop at the employee.
It's just going to butt heads for no reason.
Exactly. That's not how we're going to resolve this. We don't want to be in court arguing over a company car that was taken after a disciplinary and then HR being on someone's right. It's a waste of legal costs.
Yes.
Conflict reduction, take the higher road in this situation. We don't even really want to be getting into a legal argument about it.
No. Resolution-based outcomes.
Yes.
For the win. Second question. They're trespassing on my property. What rights do they have to enter my property or interact with my family?
So ultimately, if you've got property that you own or that you've got the legal right to occupy, other than certain individuals, so police potentially or high court appointed bailiffs, nobody has the right to enter your property if you don't give them permission to do so. I think there's, you know, things like ambulance workers. Obviously, if you pass out, they're going to come in. You know, they're not going to ask permission to come in. Though actually, I think they do kind of knock and go, hello.
Yeah,
it's the ambulance.
Like, they don't
come
in.
You know, they don't just kind of kick your door in.
Very British thing, though, isn't it? We'd like to knock and probably go.
Ask for a cup of tea on the way in, that sort of thing. So, no, they don't. But again, if I was the employee in this situation, I'd be thinking, do I really want to go down this road of going, well, you're breaking the law by being on my front drive?
You're doing this, you're doing that.
Exactly.
It's just like when
you kind of look at this with a cool head. Legally, you might be correct. There could be, as I say, I'm not that type of lawyer. There could be potentially a trespass there. Is that really the hill that you want to die on?
No,
it's not.
No. Waste of time and like, I don't know. I like to use my I don't want to say anger, but like the amount of
it's a waste of energy.
Yeah, energy will do for the time being.
Yeah, and I'm a bit like water. Easiest path. It's generally where I want to go, you know. And
flow.
Yeah. And I'd say that's what we should have been doing in this situation. I'd have been, you know, if he didn't want to face them, I'd have been sending the daughter out to say, look, it's been a bad day. We'll get the car back to you within 24 hours. Mm-hmm. Can you just give us some time to talk him down?
Mm-hmm.
That would probably have extracted a bit of empathy from HR to go, okay, fine, look, as long as we know it's coming back at some point, yes, fine, appreciate it's been an upsetting day. That would have been a much more reasonable situation than having the F off and this and, you know, the handbags at dawn on the driveway.
It's not combative, isn't it?
Thankfully as well, the car that HR wasn't branded. Had this been a branded vehicle that HR had followed in, this would have been all over YouTube. You can see it. Yeah.
Neighbours outside, like,
yeah,
look what's happening, yeah. Been on the news.
And you don't want that, do you? So as well, thinking what things look like to an outsider, is that reasonable point of view that employers love so much? Let's not descend to that level.
I can just imagine like the HR people like, get your hats on, we're going to go get him, we're going to war type thing. I can imagine it now. Final question as an employee. What should I do if I feel threatened or harassed by company representatives or if they're causing emotional distress to me or my family?
So in this situation, we've got Dave's daughter who's saying that by having HR turning up, that it was causing him a mental health injury. So it was affecting his mental health. I would say from an employee perspective, having work sort of try and enter your personal space is going to make you feel like you're under pressure. I mean, he's got no obligation to come outside, has he? You know, he can sort of hole himself up in his house if he wants to. So the employee has got the choice over whether to engage in this situation. I mean, my view would have been, as I've said, you know, with the daughter asking for that space to say, look, I am going to comply with your reasonable instructions. Can you just give me a bit of time to digest this? But if you feel that, you know, an employer is, their behavior is harassing, my first suggestion is always tell them that that's how it's making you feel. Mm. So that communication, opening those communication channels, and from a conflict reduction point of view, you know, if someone tells you about a personal impact that something's having, it's very hard to kind of go aggressive with that, that we should be using empathy in those situations to say, right, okay, actually taking a second look at this, I can see this is starting to get a bit out of control. So first instance, raise it, communicate how you're feeling and engage on a calm, measured level. Mm-hmm. And if we can't, then let's take some time out of the situation, cool off, cool heads, and then open that channel of communication.
I mean, this sounds like it's gone from, like, there's almost layers to it. It's like, this guy's added a little bit of tension here, HR's mm-hmm. added tension here. Whereas you mentioned there, like, if we talk a lot about work naturally, all of us, mm-hmm. whereas there's situations where we'll talk about our personal lives and, like, you are open up, per se, it disarms people, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Like, you feel a different type of way as opposed to a more formal talk, it doesn't sound like that's really happened here.
No.
There's been no real, like, personal understanding between the people. It's just been like...
And you're right, it's that escalation, it's that ladder effect.
Yeah,
and once
yeah.
that kind of gathers momentum, it's very, very hard for people to back down. Because, you know, a natural human emotion is pride.
Yes.
And once we get entrenched in our position, even when we know that we're wrong, it can be very, very hard to climb down. One of the hardest things for people to do is to admit that they're wrong. That bruising of the pride, you know, there's some people who, and, you know, I do quite a lot of management training and talking about things like conflict reduction and using emotional intelligence when we talk. And I'll never forget, I had this delegate who once said that he would rather take a blow to the face than a blow to his pride.
Wow.
That it was that kind of, it elicited that much of a negative feeling. That the fact that you have to verbalize and admit that you're wrong for some people is a very, very difficult thing to do.
This was a man.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, not to stereotype, but yeah.
I'm going to ask this, my default question, how old was he?
Early 40s.
Okay. It's a different generation. It's a generational thing as
Interestingly,
well,
divorced. Which, again, you know, say from a communication, admitting you're wrong perspective, you know, my husband's motto is happy wife, happy life.
Yeah, I've heard that before, yeah. I've heard that.
That, yeah, it is a big deal for some people to, you know, they might know internally that they're wrong, but to verbalise that, apologising and admitting that you're wrong are two very difficult things to do. And I dealt with a tribunal years ago, so it was back in my claimant days, and we were suing a local authority. And we'd had 3 or 4 days of tribunal, and the other side approached me and said, we want to talk settlement before we actually get to a decision. So off we go into a room, hash out some terms. And one of my client's hard limits, which was, I will go to hearing, I don't care if I lose. The only condition that they were prepared to accept settlement was if there was an apology. And apologies never happen in litigation.
No?
Even when you've got someone who loses, they'll often, and you see it in the press all the time, they'll release a press release that says, we respect the judgment that's been given. We're considering our legal options over whether to appeal or not, and lessons have been learned. They will very, very, very rarely ever say, unless they have been ordered to do it, that they apologize. And even if they do apologize, it will be, we apologize that this is the perception that it's caused.
How this was received.
Exactly. Yeah, so it's very rarely a direct apology. So in this situation, said to the other side, look, this isn't going to go away unless my client gets an apology. And we got one.
Oh.
But the only way it was agreed to was it had to be in a private room.
Sorry.
With no one was able to see in, so no windows. You couldn't see that, you know, someone was apologising. Yep, so no phones, no recording devices. It was in private. The door had to be closed.
I was joking.
And no one was allowed to talk about it ever again.
Oh, wow.
So the claimant wasn't allowed to, basically, other than to tell me, confirm that she'd had it, wasn't allowed to say that they'd apologised.
Not a breath about this.
But when they came out the room, there were like tear-streaked faces from the two of them. And I said to her, what happened? She said, well, sat down, there was an apology, and we got very emotional and cried and hugged it out. And she said she would never have gone to court. She wasn't bothered about the finances of the matter. Yeah. She wanted that human element of someone to say, we did this to you and it was wrong.
Wow.
And it was remarkable.
It's a powerful thing, eh?
It was. I mean, she wasn't allowed to tell anybody living ever that it happened, yeah. but it took that level of lawyers negotiating yeah. to get these people to apologise, and it just never happens. And it's, wow. it's people get that entrenched and they see it as such a powerful thing. People just aren't prepared to do it. It's really, really strange. And
wow.
I'm dealing with a client at the moment who have made some mistakes. And my advice to them has been, admit it, apologise and make the situation right. And they're worried that if they admit it and apologise, that they are accepting that they have broken the law and that they're going to get sued. So you're going to get sued anyway. You have broken the law and they've got really, really good evidence. Wouldn't you rather rectify this?
Yeah.
Show that you have shown some remorse. Show that you have tried to fix it. Because then if you end up in court anyway, that is going to go in your favour.
Yeah, I was going to say, is that going to be
having black and white evidence that you have done something wrong and that you remain entrenched in your position.
You sit there and be stubborn and, yeah, you cut yourself off. I always think, like, I know maybe perceived as quite proud and stubborn at times, but I always think you cut yourself off from learning experiences if you don't apologise for certain things.
Yeah. And if an apology makes you uncomfortable, there's still nice things that we can say recognise that perhaps something hasn't gone the way that we wanted.
Yeah,
look
absolutely.
At things like training, culture change, trying to fix a situation. So particularly where we've got someone who says that they feel harassed or feel that they're being bullied, well, let's do something about it. We don't always, as employers, have to take a hugely defensive position all the time because we can't be right all the time. And I think that's a trend that we often see, is that when people feel that they've lawyered up, is that they never have to admit that they're wrong and they can legally fight their way out of any situation, when actually there is a lot of power in conflict reduction.
Mm. Putting the human back in human resources, eh?
There we go.
Bloody hell, I should be a salesman. lessons learned for today. What emergency measures can HR departments take to stop from this happening in the future? We mentioned that the AI policy type thing.
Tightening your policies, making sure they're bespoke to your business and that they meet your business needs. So it could be, you know, if you've got terms with a lease hire company that says as soon as employment's ended that they expect the car back, then you need your policy to say it's got to be returned immediately. So things like that, little niche things that AI isn't necessarily going to pick up on. Make sure that you've read it, that it's applicable to your business, and that it's not just, oh, well, here we go, we've got a company car policy. Well, read it. What does it say? Is it right for the purposes that you need it? So I'd say, yeah, policies, contracts, step number one. Two, when we're in a situation where we feel that things are starting to get heated and get very entrenched, take that step back, take a cool head approach and think, is there a way that we can reduce this conflict rather than ploughing on and trying to prove that we are right, which actually is often just going to escalate matters.
Yeah, it's not going to help, is it? Closing thoughts, key themes. So what happened?
We got the car back.
Obviously.
Yeah. So I drafted an email for HR to send to Dave to say, look, it hasn't been a great day for anybody. Take a couple of days, get what you need out of the car, and we can either make arrangements for someone to collect it or for it to be dropped off somewhere or for you to come and hand it back. And in the end, he posted the keys. Someone went to go get it. And actually, we gave the keys to the lease hire company. Said, look, don't send somebody from the company or someone that he recognises. Because again, we're in that kind of dignity and pride point.
The man's lost his job, hasn't
he? Yeah, he didn't appeal the dismissal. He was banged to rights kind of on that as well, which again kind of shows you where he was coming from in this situation. He knew he was in the wrong about what he'd done that had led to his employment being ended. He probably had to go home and tell his wife and his daughter, lost my job and now I'm losing the car. You know, so yeah, the car came back. He hadn't keyed it or slashed the tyres, thankfully. HR lived to fight another day.
It sounds like a little bit of a defensive reaction from Dave here.
Yeah.
But these things happen, don't they? That's all I've got time for.
Yeah.
For today.
Episode 22 wrapped up.
22 done. Okay, yeah. Thanks for watching, everyone. Like, comment, subscribe. Cheers.
Until next time, we're your host signing off from HRER. Take care of your HR and may your workplace be disaster-free. Before we go, a big thank you to you for tuning in, and don't forget to subscribe. If you have your own ER stories or suggestions for future episodes, reach out to us at Heroes or on social media or even HRER@heroes.co.uk. As we navigate the maze of workplace blunders, remember that no organisation is perfect. But by sharing these stories, we can all work towards creating healthier, happier and more productive workplaces.